Chapter 4 of Job, start verse 1. Then Eliphaz the Temanite answered and said, "If we essay to commune with you, wilt you be grieved? But who can withhold himself from speaking? Behold, thou hast instructed many, and you have strengthened the weak hands. Thy words have upholden him that was falling, and you have strengthened the feeble knees. But now it has come upon you, and you fainted. It touched you, and you are troubled. Is not this thy fear, thy confidence, thy hope, and thy uprightness of thy ways? Remember, I pray thee, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the righteous cut off? Even as I have seen, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same. By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of his nostrils are they consumed. The roaring of the lion, and the voice of the fierce lion, and the teeth of the young lion are broken. The old lion perishes for lack of prey, and the stout lion's whelps are scattered abroad. Now a thing was secretly brought to me, and my ear received a little thereof. In thoughts from the visions of the night, when deep sleep falls on men, fear came upon me in trembling, which made all my bones to shake. Then a spirit passed before my face, the hair of my flesh stood up. I stood still, but I could not discern the form thereof. An image was before mine eyes. There was silence, and I heard a voice saying, Shall mortal man be more just than God? Shall a man be more pure than his Maker? Behold, he put no trust in his servants, and his angels he charged with folly. How much less in them that dwell in houses of clay, whose foundation is the dust, which are crushed before the moth? They are destroyed from morning till evening. They perish forever without any regarding it. Does not their excellency which is in them go away? They die even without wisdom." There's a whole lot of understanding in this chapter, in the next chapter too. We're going to focus on 4 today, 5 next week hopefully. Back to the first verse. We know this man is talking to Job, right? And what does Job mean again? Hated and persecuted. Okay. So if your name has been exchanged for the word Job here, what do you expect out of life? People to hate you and persecute you for what you believe in God. Paul even was persecuted, and they called him a heretic. And he said, in the way they call me a heretic, I do worship my God. They call it a heresy. So we got to know that we're not going to get along with the majority of people, correct? And it's not for someone who is weak, because this is a tough road to hoe. If everybody could walk it, then what would be the point of it? There's a sifting process, and this is what this life is. Big grain floor, and God's putting the fan on us. We're going to blow away all that stuff that ain't supposed to be with us. So there's nothing left but the grain, the word left in us. But Eliphaz, the one who's doing the talking, his name means, my God is gold. So we kind of know where his drift is going already, isn't it? It's into money and wealth. And he's a Temanite, which is an Edomite, which also speaks of comfort. So he's looking for the easy way to go. Would you agree with that? And he responded and said this, if we attempt, not assay, but if we attempt to speak to you, will you be what? Offended. Will you be offended? Now he says, I'm going to talk to you, but if I say something, are you going to be offended? That's the natural man speaking to another natural man. And he says, well, the Temanite is Adam man, a flesh man,
right,
speaking to Job, who Job is wallowing in his self-pity right now. Okay, so who's he talking to? To his natural man. He's talking to flesh. He said, now if I'm going to talk to you and say some things to you, are you going to be offended? How many of us know people, if they're walking in a lot of trouble and turmoil in their life, you go to tell them, look, your problem isn't out there, it's in here. How many of them is going to like that? They're probably going to chew your arm off and beat you with it. Okay? So we've got to realize this is a natural man speaking here. He said, you're going to be offended probably if I say something to you. Okay? If you are my friend, or I am your friend or brother, you should be able to say anything you have to say to me, even if it's harsh, you know, not with intent to hurt, but the truth, You know, and the truth will tear the flesh, okay? And if it's delivered in love, I'm going to receive that. Okay? I'm going to receive it, and I'm going to thank you for it. But if you go with the wrong attitude driving behind it, who's going to receive it? Proverbs says that a man offended, is a brother offended, is harder to be won than a city or a castle with iron bars. See? You shut their mind off to you. They'll never hear you again. And if how are you ever going to reach them if you've got them offended? See? So we got to try not to offend, but bring the truth. And this guy here, he's worried about offending him because of natural reasons. Okay? He said, but who can withhold himself from speaking? Well, that's something we have to learn to do. Be swift to hear, slow to speak. Right? Something we really have to learn to do. If you take Jesus' writings about Jesus and find out that he didn't speak a whole lot, look how much is written about him in there that someone said he said, but even the red words, how much of that, if you condensed it all down, how much of that would be in the New Testament? Just a few pages. I mean, it's not very much. He only spoke what his Father spoke. He kept himself on course. He didn't put his own opinion in anything, did he? So he didn't say, well, I know Father said that, but I believe this. See, that's not the way it works. We say what Father says regardless of whether we like it or not. It's not a popularity contest, is it? We're trying to do what is right by the Father's vision. And if we have the heart of Christ, we have the heart of who? The Father. We have the heart of the Father. So if I have the heart of the Father, how could I even desire to do anything else? Can you hear what I'm saying? Now, I'm not talking about what your flesh wants to do. I'm saying about what you want to do, because you aren't the thing I'm looking at here, this flesh. What you are is that spirit within you. And that can do no wrong. That's why he said in 1 John 3:8-9, if you're born of God, you cannot sin. Your spirit can't make a mistake because it loves God. Your flesh don't love God, I'm going to tell you. Some people think their flesh does, but it don't. Okay, now look what he says here in verse 3. Now this is Eliphaz speaking to Job. He says, behold, you have instructed many, and you have strengthened the weak hands. Your words have helped him that was falling, and you have strengthened the feeble knees. Now he's saying, well, you look at all these good things you're doing, but there's a hook in it. Look at the next verse. He's planting doubt and condemnation and guilt in him. He's coming to tell him, what kind of sin you in, brother? That's what he's really saying. Because wait till we get the rest of it here. In the next verse it says, but now it's come upon you and you are offended. Not faintest, but she'll be offended. It touched you and you are what? Not troubled, but terrified. Okay, you're terrified or anxious. Okay? It came upon him and you're terrified and anxious. Okay? So what's he doing to him? He's saying, you think you've done all these great things, but then when it turns around and comes to your house, it's not the same. That's kind of like talking it, but not walking it. See, hypocrite would be a good word for it. And that's the condemnation guilt that comes. So when people see you in the world and see your flesh do something that they don't see as holy and righteous, the first thing they do is what? They put that finger out there and point out there. You got to watch. It's got a sharp object. It's got a nail on the end of it. You got to make sure when you point, you're pointing the right way. Because here's the problem, right here. See, I have no business judging you in anything. See, God will take care of that, won't he? I don't have to point the finger at anybody. But this is what the natural people do. It's what religion does. They come and point the finger at you and tell you you've done some bad thing and you're reaping what you sowed now. Okay? God's going to get you. He said in verse 6, is not this thy fear or reverence of God, your confidence, your hope, and the what? The integrity of your ways or your lifestyle? He said, this is the integrity of your lifestyle. You're a hypocrite. You say one thing and you're doing something else. Well, isn't that what most people see? Because most people come to church this morning, and I'm not talking about in this fellowship, I'm saying in general, in church world. They come to church, and they come in with that hold in thou attitude, and as they're coming in, they're kicking somebody in the shins and slapping their kids and spitting on somebody because they're mad at something, at the world, the way the world treated them, or they had a hangover from the night before. And they're all coming in doing these bad things with bad attitudes, and it's not about coming in pretty dressed up. with spit shine shoes and hair fixed up and all this stuff. That's not what it's about. It's about the attitude of our hearts. And if I come in with the wrong attitude, what am I even doing here? See? If I come in with the attitude that I'm just angry and upset and all that, I shouldn't even be here, should I? I should stay home, get myself right. That's what I should do. But people say, well, if I stay home, I can't get right. I said, no, you'll get sick of yourself sooner or later, and you'll come get what you want. Okay? Stay home long enough, you get sick of that flesh, and you'll come get it. Verse 7. Remember now, whoever perished innocent, or where were the righteous cut off or destroyed? When were the righteous cut off and destroyed? Well, Jesus asked a question about the 17 that were killed under the Tower of Siloam. He said, do you reckon these were more wicked than anyone else? He said, he wouldn't even wait for an answer from him. He said, I tell you, no, they weren't. God had a purpose in what went on. They weren't any more wicked than anybody else, and neither is anybody else here, because flesh is wicked and spirit is not. That's all there is, isn't there? Flesh and spirit. And the flesh is going back to the dust, the spirit's returned to God who gave it, and guess what? That's the end of that. Oh, I wish you could see it so simple as I can see it. What this guy is doing, Eliphaz, and he represents religion, which their focus is on the gold, and comfort, and their Edomites. It's religious justification. This man is saying, look, I'm not going through what you're going through. He said, I'm not being tempted. I ain't got all this bad things. I didn't lose my children. I didn't lose all my wealth. I didn't lose all my animals. Did he? What's he saying? I'm holier than thou. And I got a right to come and tell you how bad you are because I'm a good guy. See? And good and evil came off the same tree, didn't it, Mike? If it comes from the same tree, what's the difference? Because a tree, James said in James chapter 2 or 3, he said, a tree doesn't bear good fruit and bad fruit. A fountain doesn't bring forth fresh water and bitter water. See? It's the same thing. If that tree brought anything, it's the same thing. And the tree of good and evil is the same thing. Guess what? Good and evil isn't what it's about. It's about God versus good and evil. Okay? And we know whenever you justify yourself, what are you doing? You're lying to yourself. Justifying is just a lying. Even as I have seen, they that plow iniquity and sow not wickedness, but literally worry, reap the same. And the word there, wickedness, should be, like I say, worry. Reap the same. And Philippians 4:6 says, be anxious for what? Nothing. Okay? If I have worry, tell me that I'm not doing something wrong here. See, I'm not taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. If something comes in my head and starts beating me up, what should I be doing with it? Should say, hey, take a hike. I'm not going there. I'm not staying on that vein of thought. I'm going somewhere else. And if you don't do that, who else is going to do it? Do you think that someone's just going to come down through the clouds and come down there and open up your head and suck all that nasty stuff out of it? I know they think that, but it's not going to happen. See, we have to prepare ourselves. The bride has to make herself ready, doesn't she? If I want my man, the Spirit of God, I got to get my woman in order. I'm not talking about my wife. I'm talking about my soul. My soul has got to be put in order. Because if I don't honor the Christ in me, I'll never honor anybody else in you. I got to do it in me first. I got to recognize the Christ and honor that Christ by the way I live. Verse 9, he goes on in his condemnation by saying, by the breath or the Spirit of God they perish, and by the breath of his nostrils are they consumed. Do you think that mentality maybe could be a misunderstanding? In the Old Testament, we see a lot of view of God doing judgment. God gets credit for everything, doesn't he? But once his son paid the price on that cross, why would there be any of that? Why would God want to take a charge me with anything when his son already paid for it? It's not right, is it? And God is right. If anything's right, God's right. He's not going to charge me, put on my account for something I did if he's already paid for it. So I don't have to worry about that. He goes on and says, the roaring of the lion and the voice of the fierce lion and the teeth of the young lions are broken. Now, the roaring of the lion. Remember what it says in Peter? As a roaring lion, Satan walks around as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. That's what it says. It said, but the voice of that lion and the teeth of the young lions are broken. Do you know how they got broken? The teeth got broken out of them. Remember what I said a while ago? It's just like just barking but no bite. You know, the Spirit of God, when he died on the cross, said it's finished. Right there, he broke the teeth out of the lion. Can't bite no more. That was the finished point of it. But actually, the book says he was the lamb that was slain before the conception of the world, before the foundation of the world. So whenever he actually did it before there, but we got to see the fulfillment of it in the actual motion in flesh on the cross on Golgotha. It was already done, wasn't it? He said, it's all finished now. So the teeth are gone. So you might say the Spirit of God is a good dentist. He removed all of his teeth. Cavities and all. Took them all out. And it says, the old lion perishes for lack of prey. The old lion perishes for lack of prey. Talk to me. What is the old lion? Carnal mind. Remember what happened in Samson? With Samson? He killed a lion with the jawbone of an ass. Wonder which ass he was talking about. See? He was talking about himself. And this is an internal work. And the old lion perishes for lack of prey. You know what the old lion eats? Dust. The serpent's food is the dust of the earth. It'll lick it all the days of its life and crawl on its belly. That's us. And we're going to stay in this earth because that serpent nature will never ascend into the heavenlies. See? And it has nothing to eat. It's going to perish. If I don't feed this beast in here, that dust, guess what happens to him? What did it say? It starves to death and it dies. Well, praise God. Put the Word of God in. You know what? That old lion can't live on it. It can't live on it. It's got to perish. Because it says the natural man receives nothing from the Spirit of God, neither can he, because it's spiritually discerned. That old lion has no spirit, because it's flesh. And the stout lion, or the lionesses, whelps, are scattered abroad. Well, you know, if one can put 1,000 flight, two can put 10,000 flight, when you scatter them out, they're not as effective, are they? Dashing their heads against the stones in the Psalms? Yep. You've got to take care of it while they're young. You get the old one out of the way, guess what? Those little ones are nothing to deal with. They're nothing. You can deal with them. And he already took care of that, see? He took care of the big lion. When he died on the cross, he died as us. Did he not? He said that he was the last Adam. See, that's the big lion. It's dead. If you believe that he took care of that last Adam, then why would I be cohorting with the old flesh? We all have lapses. There's no condemnation in that. It's part of a process of growing. But when we come to maturity, what I'm saying is we will no longer believe what that flesh tells us. We'll know the difference between that voice and the voice of our Father. They won't follow. We will follow the shepherd's voice, not the other one. Okay? Where am I at? 12. Now a what was secretly brought to me? The thing there should be word. It's the bar. Was secretly brought to me. A word was secretly brought to me in my ear, and I received a little of it. Why? Don't you see a problem? Religion only gets a little of it. When the word comes to my ear, I want every bit I can get a hold of. I want 440. I don't want 110. I want the joke to the full bite of everything he's got. And I know that's going to be hard on the flesh. But you know what? I want it all. But religion gets a little bit of it. And they even, I mean, that's kind of boasting there. Word came to my ear and I got a little of it. They ain't going to understand very much, are they? They don't want to. They're caught up in that I, me, my, and mine world. Self-centered. He said, in thoughts from the visions or dreams of the night. Well, this word thought here is not literally what the language says. It literally says ambivalence. In ambivalence from the dreams of the night. Does anyone know what ambivalence means? It's one of them big long words. It means something else. So why do you even have the word? Well, just tell what it means. You know, I mean, that's just the way people are. They confuse things. That's unconfuse it. That's unscramble it. In ambivalence, it means a coexistence of opposing attitudes or thoughts. So he said, in his night dreams, the thoughts and dreams were opposing each other. Hello, your thoughts oppose each other in the daytime too, don't they? Called a double-minded person. And that's what we are until we walk into the maturity of Christ. Correct? So he said, in this duality he's talking about, he said, when the deep sleep falls upon men, fear or terror came upon me and trembling, which made all my bones to shake. Now he said, when this thing came in the middle of the night, he saw things he didn't want to see. And sometimes because we are so bad about trying to reject what God says to us, when we lay down and get real quiet and our brain slows down, guess what God will do? He'll put them in you. See, he'll put them in you. And that's what he didn't hear. See, he didn't want to hear it in the daytime because it's in the I, me, my, and mine world. So God talks to you when you slow down. That's why when I go to the bathroom, that's where I hear God speak to me a lot of times. Because when we go to the bathroom, that's just when we're uninhibited in there, see? So we'll just relax and be who we be. And so that's sometimes everything else slows down and we can hear God. It's not anything holy about the bathroom, see? It's the fact that in there, my flesh relaxes because no one else can see me. You see what I'm saying? And that's the way we need to be in the presence of God at all the times. All the time. And guess what we'll hear? We'll hear God talking, won't we? All we got to do is slow down. That's the worship I was talking about earlier. Be like Him. Slow down. Can you see Jesus running around the hectic life what we run around today like the world is today? I mean, I don't see Him shook up at anything. I just see Him just walking along smiling, do whatever He's got to do, go through what He's got to go through, deal with it, not complaining, not murmuring, and just do what He's got to do. But see, because we all got the same stuff. Different measures makes no difference, does it? Because see, if I have the ability to withstand a lot of pain, and you have ability to withstand very little bit of pain, if God sends you a whole bunch of pain, what's it going to do to you? It's going to break you down. But you know, if He sends me your little bit of pain, I won't even pay attention to it. God knows what He's doing. Everybody's different, just like our DNA, our fingerprints, everything. So if we will just relax and let God do with us as He wants to do, He knows exactly what we need. So the things that come in our life are not by coincidence. The people you meet are not by coincidence. There's always a reason for everything. Okay? Don't get excited. Relax. He said when the terror came upon him, his bones began to shake. Okay? What are the bones to him? The bones is the very foundation and structure of who you are, isn't it? So my very structure in the natural does not want to hear. Does not want to hear what God has to say or see what God wants to show me. It will cause problems in that realm, won't it? It'll make the flesh really kick up. Okay? Then a spirit, and the word A isn't there, then the spirit passed before my face, and the hair of my flesh stood up. Now I want you to notice something. This is a natural man talking to a natural man. He saw something spiritual, and his hair stood up as the spirit passed by his face. There's nothing spiritual about that. And the church world says, "Whoo! I got goosebumps. God must have been here." That's just your emotions. You don't know what God is yet. God is truth. Didn't that Jesus said, "I am the truth." Truth. If you want to know God, know the truth. Okay? Know the truth. If you know truth, not a truth, but the truth, guess what you know? You know God. You'll know His nature and His character. Won't be any different. So there's nothing spiritual about it. It's a physical feeling. And said, it, the spirit is, it says, it should be, the spirit stood still, but I could not discern the form thereof. An image was before my eyes, there was silence, and I heard a voice saying, can humanity be more righteous than who? This is another word different from Elohim or Yahweh. It makes it say this, the one true God. Can humanity be more righteous than the one true God? Yeah, I think it was. Okay, before God, more righteous than God, before his maker. Can a man be more righteous than the one true God before his maker? It's not going to happen. Be pure. Well, I already said it. Let me say it, verse 17 again. Shall mortal man, or can humanity be more righteous than the one true God? Can humanity be more pure before his maker than his maker? It can't happen. Verse 18. Behold, he put no trust in his servants and his angels, or literally messengers, he charged with error. He said he put no trust in his servants. No trust in his angels, his messengers. What's that saying? What's it say to you? What's it say to you? He put no trust in his angels or his messengers. Messengers are flesh. Yeah. So he put no trust in the flesh. How much less, or literally indeed, them that dwell in houses of clay. That's us. Well, how much less should literally be the word indeed. Indeed them that dwell in houses of clay, whose foundation is the dust. Not in the dust. The word in is an added word. So whose foundation is dust. See, where is our foundation at? It's on the rock of Christ. But most people think this flesh is what our foundation is. They think we came from Adam. My Genesis face, my beginning face was in God. It was not in Adam. See, that's the dust man in the clay house. And he said, I can't trust those in the clay house. I got to have the one that knows their foundation is on the rock of Christ. Okay? Which are crushed before the moth. They are, and you know, a moth is something that's very delicate. And he's telling you, we're frail. There's a frailty in our flesh. God, we all got to know that the ages we're getting to be. You know, our flesh is very frail. It doesn't take much to zap it out. We're here today, we're gone tomorrow. It doesn't take much, does it? When the breath of God's gone, you're gone, that's for sure. Said they are destroyed, or literally they are beaten and crushed from morning to evening. They perish not forever, but they perish perpetually. Now there's a big difference in perishing forever and perishing perpetually. When it says, what's the word? Say again. I'd flip the word there. It says they perish forever. That means they're gone, that's the end of them, never be seen again. But that's not what it's trying to convey here. He's saying the houses of clay with a foundation of dust. Sit down. He says this house of clay is being perpetually crushed. What's he saying? It's a way of life. One dies and another one comes up. We raise up our children and we perish, and our children step into adulthood and they raise their children. That's the perpetual way God has planned this thing to be. We can't stop that. I don't want to stop it. I mean, it comes to a point in life when your body starts wearing out. Guess what? And everybody wears differently. Some people can go to 100 and look healthy as a teenager, and others at 50 look like they're worn out. That's me. Yeah. But, I mean, that happens. That's okay. But I'm saying we have to realize that's God's plan for things to be dealt with. If no one died, you know this population of this planet would be so big you couldn't even get on it. It just overpopulated. And God already knows that. The circle of life, it's got to come back around. And we don't die as people think we die. Everybody thinks we die and that's the end of us. We go lay in the ground somewhere and wait till God comes back to judge us or something. The book says when we die, the dust returns to the earth, the spirit returns to God who gave it. We ain't waiting for anything. I'm hillbilly, I can say we ain't. We ain't waiting for nothing. God's in us right now. Why do I have to wait to meet God after I die? God's in me. I can meet Him now, every day. Every breath I take is God in me. It's God in you. We got to realize that. We don't have to wait for anything except for God, whatever He wants to do. And it says, they perish perpetually without anyone, what? Without any regarding it. Now, that's not what it literally says. Let me rephrase it the way the word says it in the Hebrew. It says, they perish perpetually without any transformation or change. Ouch. Boy, there's a big bite. They die without any change. How many do we know that die with no change? That's okay, because that's the way God wants it. He'll take care of it when the time comes. See? Every man in his own order. Let God do what He wants to do. And you know what? The ones that have no change are here for your benefit. Just like Eliphaz, they're here for your benefit. Now you notice Job didn't get mad and grip his head off here for long, but he had something to say to him. And we have to realize that people's going to come in our lives to bring things to us. And I've shared this before about a gentleman that, I mean, I got self-righteous with him. And I thought, who is this uncircumcised Philistine to address me the way he did? And I walked out, got in my truck to leave that man's business, and God spoke to me and said, what's the matter, son? He get you? He was right, wasn't he? He hit you. You was wrong. You had a wrong attitude in your heart. And he said, you're being self-righteous now. And he made me get out of my truck, turn the key off, get out of my truck, and go back into an uncircumcised Philistine and say, I want you to forgive me. I'm sorry for the attitude of my heart towards you. And the man says, huh? He had no idea what I was saying. I said, well, I was acting, you know, a little self-righteous, you know. He said, well, I don't know what you're talking about. He had no clue. But see, it wasn't about him. It was not about him. It was about my heart being changed. And I had to accept that. So I just said, I'm just doing what my father told me to do. I apologize for the attitudes of my heart towards you. And you know what? I walked out clean. And he had no clue what was going on. It's okay. It's all right, isn't it? Without any change of character is exactly what we're talking about. Verse 21. Does not their what? Their excellency? Well, that word excellency is also a misinterpretation. It should say, does not their remainder or remnant, which is in them, start on a journey? Do you hear that? Does not their remainder or remainder in them start on a journey? They die without wisdom. That's what it says. It's not over just because our flesh dies. They start on a journey. That's what it says. They start on a journey. See? So if I don't get my wisdom and understanding here, when I get done, guess what? I got to take a journey. And see, he's no respecter of persons. He can't give it to me by making me walk through all this stuff just like Jesus did. So he gave it to Jesus that way. He had to earn his way into it by suffering the things he was sent to do. We must suffer the same way. Do you think anybody else is going to walk in this without suffering the same things that he did? It's an impossibility, see? That's a law of God. God said so. So that's a law of physics just as much as gravity. You can't defy the gravity. It's going to fall if you drop it. That's the things people don't understand. When God said it, that God is physics. Everything that is because of God. And he put these laws of nature in about the seasons. You can't stop the seasons, can you? And the same thing with this. They're going to start their journey when they die. So if they're here to help us on our journey, should we be upset with them or should we be thankful for them? And my favorite verse is what? Next verse says what? Philippians 4:7. But in all things, give thanks unto God. Not in some of them, but all of them. So guess what? Why should I be upset with anything about anybody? I got no right. If I am claiming to be a son of God, I have no right because I am a what? Servant. What right does a servant have? Oh, thank you. None. See, Jesus didn't come to be served, but to be the servant. If we're walking like him, we are servants. We have no right to complain. I was in a conversation with Lois here, sometime in the last few weeks. And she made a statement to me. We were talking about someone that I knew, someone had done something to me. And she said, "Do you realize people take advantage of you?" And I said, "Duh." How could I not know it and be alive? If I'm alive, I know someone takes advantage of me, don't I? And that's not saying I want people to take advantage of me, but I don't have any control over what they do. I can only control my heart and the way I respond to what they do to me. True? I don't have any right to try to control anybody else. So, that's just the way life is if you walk as a son of God. Because he didn't come to destroy, did he? He came to save the world, not destroy it. Any questions, comments, or rocks to throw? We receive everything.